Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you in on Friday. Merry Christmas, happy holidays. We're winding down 2017 here on Hail Varsity Radio. On today, weekend edition, tomorrow morning with Mark Kranak, and then we are off till January 2nd. We thank you so much for tuning in and spending time with us this season on Hail Varsity Radio. We are loaded up. We've got a bit of a deadline with the Pride of Fairbury, Bill Dolman. We'll get caught up with Bill here shortly. He's down in New Mexico getting ready for some college basketball. So we'll get Bill Dolman here on the horn shortly. And pretty busy show for you. So sit back, enjoy. If you're bumping around and doing that holiday shopping thing, Kyle Woodall will be with us next segment. He is the linebackers coach at Butler. He coached Will Honus, and we'll get the bird's eye view on what Nebraska has at linebacker. Another verbal commit for Nebraska today, as expected. And Justin McGriff at wideout. We'll talk about him in a little bit here with Hail Varsity Radio as what Nebraska added to this recruiting class. It wouldn't be the holiday season without a little Mike Leach. So we'll get caught up with the Pirate, Mike Leach, and his experience with Santa. So you'll hear that here before the 5 o'clock hour. Ralph Brown checks in on the recruiting class. 10-year NFL vet, standout for Nebraska football. Ralph's thoughts on some of the kids a part of this 2018 signing day. The Friday forecast and room for you at 466-377-6800-825-5865. Can tap the line, Chilling Bridge, Cork, and Tap House. Without further ado, we bring in the Pride of Fairbury, NBC Sports' Bill Dolman. Billy D., thanks for jumping on with this. You're down in Heisenberg land, is that correct?
I am at the Pit in Albuquerque, New Mexico, one of the famed basketball arenas, and I haven't been here for about 5 or 6 years, so it's kind of fun to be back. And this place is full. It really rocks. Probably not going to be that tonight for Prairie View A&M, but damn it, you just never know. That's why they play the game.
No, I understand that. The Pit, where Jimmy V, the Search to Hug, you know.
This is a historic venue, and one of the great things about it is when you walk up the tunnel, people may not believe it's actually higher than the Mile High City, and I mean that in a more altitude or
right
elevation way. Nothing is as high as Denver, trust me. But it reminds you, it says you are now at 5326 feet above sea level, 83% available oxygen molecules. Welcome to the Pit. And then right next to that sign, it says warning of altitude sickness, talks about lightheadedness, disorientation. You may feel faint. It's right there for when they go to the locker room. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what they see. So it's kind of fun.
I need to know if you did any time at Cather Pound. They came down today around 9 a.m. Central.
Yeah, I was kind of amused. I saw that the University of Nebraska sent out a video of those buildings coming down with history or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you have no idea the history of that building. And if walls could talk, I was a Theta Xi guy living in a fraternity, but I had plenty of friends who lived in the dorms and spent many a time there obeying all rules at all times.
Of course you did.
I just hope that the reunion was spared, that it didn't get damaged in the rubble.
No, I had to ask you about that. If there was some memories from Bill Dolman in the old dorms, it'll be part of the book, I guess, at some point. Bill, I want to get your thoughts here. Nebraska and Scott Frost now 12 recruits for this early signing period. It's been a whirlwind, obviously, and Nebraska will will do a really good job of evaluating and then kind of go target who and what they need for February. But you had 3 weeks. Oh, and by the way, get your team ready for Auburn. And it looks really good with how Nebraska closed. You got a quarterback, you got a JUCO running back, and you got a talented linebacker in Will Honus out of Butler. What's your impression? I know you've been traveling around doing NBC, and I know you're at the Pit now, but you keep an eye on Nebraska. What'd you think of this week for Frost?
Well, I just am stunned because all of these national analysts that know so much about Scott Frost and what he's going to be able to do at Florida, and why would he take the Nebraska job? You can't recruit athletes with speed to go to Nebraska. I just don't understand that if anybody would dare sign a letter of intent. I'm surprised they're not just spending all their time in Shickley just taking their 12 guys from their graduating class. It is so idiotic, and I've said this for the last 2 or 3 weeks again. These people who make a lot of money and who are famous with their opinions just don't understand who we are and why we do and why we've done what we've been able to do other than the last 15 years. Obviously, the Nebraska brand still means something, okay? Scott Frost understands that. The people that he's bringing in certainly understand that. They've learned under him. They know what it's about. They know what kind of guy he is and how he grew up in the Nebraska system. And so we've talked about this over the last couple of years. Is the Nebraska brand still important? Mm-hmm. Of course it is. If it wasn't, it wouldn't have been that big a deal about if Scott's going to go to Nebraska or to Florida or to Oregon or wherever he might have, because people were still concerned about it. They're still writing stories about him going there. It's the most talked about hire of this college football season because it was done right. Bill Moos handled it exactly perfectly. Scott has come back and said all the right things. They've gone all over the country not fearing that they're not going to be able to get into somebody's living room. They have gone to Arizona, to Florida, to the JUCO ranks, to the high schools. They've made Nebraska priority. It's what was done for 40 years, and they're doing it again in 4 weeks. And to me, it's a testament that brand, that end, that those images of Memorial Stadium when they don't wear those stupid purple people eater or Lincoln High School hand-me-down uniforms, that brand still means something. And it carries a lot of weight when they walk into a living room and when they present themselves and present what the program and the state is all about. It's no wonder that the Greg Bells and the Honuses and these receivers out of Florida are willing to go to Nebraska because they want to be a part of something that's important, and it's important to a lot of people. Not every program in the country can say that. In fact, only a handful can. And despite the fact that we went through a 4-year case of the flu and a decade of dominance, that Nebraska's brand still matters in college football, and it's important to college football, and I think it's going to be back a lot quicker than people realize, no matter what Kirk Herbstreit says or David Pollack. What did they ever do, right? I think the Scots handled this extremely well. I don't know whether these recruits are going to pan out. Nobody ever does, mm-hmm. right? But at least they've gotten to where they need to get, and they've got the interest that Nebraska deserves.
Bill, a thought here on, and Coach DiNardo brought this up yesterday, and you were down there when it was alive and well, and then the Big 12 made some rule changes, but the partial qualifier angle is something Nebraska could do again to be different and be kind of cutting edge because you're allowed partial qualifiers in the Big 10. That's what Coach DiNardo told me yesterday, and you were there to see it work extremely effectively. Is that something you think Nebraska will think about doing again?
If that is available to be done, then Nebraska will do it. If it's not available, Nebraska will find a way to go get the players who qualify according to the rules. Mm-hmm. I'm firmly convinced of that. That's just the way it's done. It is the Nebraska way. But if they need to go find whatever caveats in the rules there are to take advantage of, Nebraska will do it, and everybody else will too. Just because they found some partial qualifiers 20 years ago, that doesn't necessarily mean that's the only reason that we won national championships. I mean, that means we brought in players, and all those guys graduated too.
Yeah.
You know, whether it was Jared Thomas, or I'm not even sure if Jared was a partial qualifier, but I know that he was headed to junior college, as I recall. But he became, a college graduate and an All-American football player. Christian Peter, okay? So they will find the best players, and they will attract them in whatever way they need to. And Nebraska's administration, I firmly believe, with the Dennis LeBlancs and the Keith Zimmers and all of those people, will make sure that it's done above board, and they will get the guys in that fit the profile of the program, and Nebraska will do what they can to make them, you know, succeed in on the field and in the classroom. That's the way it's always been done, and you've got a guy in there now who understands that, and he will make sure that his assistant coaches and all those people that are in there understand that the way it is done. So if Jerry DiNardo says that there's a partial qualifier loophole, I'm not going to say a loophole, but
opportunity probably.
Opportunity, then sure. And you can always point back to, look, we did this 20 years ago when I was a part of the program, Scott, and these guys came in, they succeeded, they won big, and they also graduated. And look where they are now, successful businessmen, successful husbands, whatever they've done. You know, most people who come through the program in Nebraska as partial qualifiers or academic All-Americans or whatever, they've gone on to succeed in life. And that's just the way it is there.
Bill, a couple minutes here. Your thought, and Dirk Chatelain wrote a story today on the fishbowl that awaits Scott Frost, and it's, you know, a different era, different time. The camera's always on, it seems like, with social media. And is that a concern of yours? Not that Scott doesn't know the gig or understand the culture, but just the weight of the job. And you were around Coach Osborne when there wasn't social media, but you know, the expectations were high, and they were probably highest for Coach Osborne because he wanted to win at that level. Scott's similar to that, I would say. But this job can also grind you down, too, can it?
Well, it certainly can. It can do it anywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at Jimbo Fisher.
Yeah.
Who, you know, it 3 years ago was on the top of the college football world, and then 2 years later is trying to get out, and 3 years later finally does. It's the character of the man, it's the character of the coach, it's the character of the people that are around, and the character of the state. Are there some Nebraska fans that are overzealous? Yes, no doubt about it. Is the worst thing to happen in our country, be it in athletics or politics or just life in general, social media and the expansion of comments and letters to the editor? It's obvious, terrible. But Scott knows what he's getting into. And the people of Nebraska know who Scott is. And I've always said, look, I think people in Nebraska, 95%, understand you're not going to win a national championship every year. You're not going to win a conference championship every year. But if you play the game right and you conduct yourself in an appropriate manner and you represent the state and the university well, people can accept the results. I really believe that. And I think Scott knows that. But I don't think he's going to be intimidated by the fishbowl. Scott is a coach of this generation. Mm. He's been at, what, Oregon? He's been at Kansas State. He's been at Northern Iowa. He's been at Central Florida. He's been in the NFL. He gets the culture of what coaching is all about these days. And if anybody, it's him. The guy's, what, 42?
Mm-hmm.
So he certainly understands what this generation is about, both the generation of the player and the generation of the parent. And I can't imagine that he's going to be intimidated by it in any way, shape, or form. And I think he has a fan base that is pretty respectful of what the job of being Nebraska's football coach is all about. And I think if anybody can handle it, it's him. Mike Riley, I think, could handle it very well. It's just the character who he was. What he wanted to do in terms of X's and O's on the field just did not work out. Bo Pelini, I think his X's and O's clearly worked out, but he couldn't handle it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, he was shown the door. But he succeeded, and his teams, I thought, played pretty hard, but the pressure of the fishbowl got to him. I can't imagine. I think Scott is much more inclined with his character to Mike Riley and his X's and O's. I don't want to say he's like Bo Pelini, but I think he'll have success on the field because I think he's a great football coach. And we're about to, you know, have a 3-4 hour infomercial for Scott Frost and Nebraska football. When that bowl game rolls around. I mean, it's everything in this coaching hiring process was 180 degrees to the right compared to what was done 15 or 20 years ago when the 4-year case of the flu was heading up the process. This has been brilliant. This was textbook, and it was perfectly done by Bill Moose and his staff, And, you know, I think it was a great representation of Nebraska. And as a result, it's been regarded as the best hire of the year. And I think it's been one of the best hiring processes I've seen in college football over the last 10 years.
Bill Dolman, Pride of Fairbury, NBC Sports with us. Bill, I have 30 seconds. Did you ever get a chance to work with Dick Enberg?
I did not work with Dick Enberg, but one time he came to Lincoln and spoke at the academic banquet at the end of the year. And Keith Zimmer and Dennis LeBlanc, again, I mentioned those guys earlier, I was young in my career as a sportscaster, and they said, how about this? How about you go get him at the airport and you take really? Him around town? And, you know, so we drove around town. We went to the I spent several hours with him that day. And, it was a real treat to spend that time with him and just glean information and really more than anything, learn about the character, not so much about the business of being a sportscaster, but being a good man in a very tough business, which we're in. And I remember that. I maybe down the road, I'll share a funny incident. Maybe today is not the day for that, but, it was a memorable day, and I've always appreciated Keith and Dennis for letting me do that, because my day with Dick Enberg was a really seminal moment for my career, just in terms of how you conduct your business.
Bill, you have a great Christmas, bud. Thanks for the time.
Merry Christmas to all of you back home. I certainly miss Nebraska, and hope you have a great Christmas and New Year.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Big-time get for Nebraska linebacker Will Hodes. His coach, position coach at Butler, Kyle Woodall, with us. Also the strength and conditioning coach at Butler. Coach Woodall, thanks for a few minutes today. How are you?
I'm doing really well. How are you?
We're doing well. And Nebraska fans extremely happy. The coaching staff extremely excited about Will Hodes. Give us a look-see, if you could, into Will. You've coached him. You know him. And let's talk about the person first before we talk about the on-field player. Tell me a little bit about Will's personality.
Well, he's everything you'd want in a player and a person. Maybe the best thing about Will is how good of a person he truly is. He's a selfless guy. He's extremely driven. He's a team-first kind of guy. Obviously, he was a team captain for us and a leader that we really depended on, both on the field and off. There will not be any character issues for Nebraska with him. He'll be a 4.0 student in the classroom. We always talk as a staff, man, can you say anything bad about Will? And there's not too many things that anybody can say. So he is the total package, both on the field and off.
Give me a couple of examples, and I believe you, but from leadership is so key. And you know that as a coach, some of those traits that he's exhibited, any specific examples come to mind of his leadership skill?
The greatest thing about Will is he doesn't have to talk about it. When he walks in the room, he makes it known that he's the man just by his actions. He's not a rah-rah kind of guy. He's not on Twitter and Facebook saying a bunch of stuff. He's going to go out, he's going to do his job, and he's going to do it very well. And he's going to demand that his teammates do that just by the way he carries himself and by the way he, you know, is on the field and off, whether that's in the classroom, the weight room, at practice. Anywhere he is, he's doing the right thing. We don't ever have to check up on Will or worry about Will doing the right thing. So in this day and age, for a kid not to have to say, look at me and put this on Twitter or Facebook, and for his teammates to know that he's the man, I think that says a lot about the kid.
Linebacker coach at Butler, Kyle Woodall with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Will Hodes, part of the Nebraska recruiting class for 18, big-time linebacker. Tell me a little bit about the scheme that Butler runs. It's a 4-3 and how he fits there. And then jump, if you could, to how you see he fits with Nebraska's 3-4.
The thing about Will is he was our Mike linebacker. And at Butler, the Mike linebacker runs the show. He lines up our D-line. He calls all kinds of stunts. Lines up the linebackers, helps with the secondary. He does everything. So he's going to get the call from the sideline, and he makes sure it runs the right way. So he's very smart, obviously, for him to be able to do that. There was actually a couple games where we just said, hey, Will, you call it based on how the offense lines up. And for a junior college, you know, where we only have limited time, 2 years with these guys, for him to be able to do that just tells you how smart he is. But for the 4-3, I mean, he's in the box a lot, you know, and he could have played outside the box, to be honest. We had no problem moving around. He just fit perfect to run the show. When you talk about him in a 3-4, he can be those two inside backers in that 3-4 scheme easy, play either one. He could come off the edge. His blitzing ability is just absolutely great, too. We sent him on so many different blitzes, and he can read blitzes and do all kinds of things. But really, we talked with him about that, whether he should stay in a 4-3, a 3-4, and it was like, hey, you can do anything. So don't worry about the scheme. You're going to be able to fit. And with a kid like Will, you find a way to get him on the field. So there won't be any issues, any kind of transition. He's going to be just fine.
Was that a potential roadblock in his mind, making that scheme shift from a 4-3 to a 3-4?
I don't think it was necessarily a roadblock. I think he just, as smart as he is, he wants to make sure he's checking all the boxes and making sure that he's making a decision where he feels he can be successful. So I think he was just doing his research. You know, we do have a little bit of a 3-4 that we ran, and he was in on that and all that stuff. So it's not going to be an issue for him.
When it came down to decision time, and you look at the suitors for Will Honus, Coach Woodall, you have Iowa, you have Kansas State, you have Nebraska, and then you have Wisconsin late. And all of the programs historically have been just tremendous with their linebacking core, and in Iowa and Wisconsin recently specifically. And when it came to the process and the decision-making for Will, Did he lean on you? Did you guys communicate? Did you help him, not necessarily send him one school or another, but just with the evaluation process, how much were you a part of it?
I mean, as much as he wanted me to be, I wasn't going to be overbearing. I let him know as soon as things started happening that we were going to support him in anything he needed. If he had questions, needed us to talk to coaches, anything he needed, we were going to be there. But at the same time, we weren't going to be overbearing and tell him he needed to do this or do that. We'll earn these opportunities, and we were just a little bit of a tool in his tool belt. So he earned it, and it was his decision to make. You know, when he had questions, we'd answer them. And, you know, I think at times it can be very overwhelming for these kids with these big-time programs and all that, but he's mature enough to handle it. And, you know, he obviously found something in Nebraska that he liked, and he's going to hold on to that.
Do you think he enjoyed the recruiting process at all? He's not much, as you've outlined so far, he's not the attention-seeking type, but he had a lot of attention.
Yeah, he did. And, you know, and we'd ask him, and you could tell that he was uncomfortable with all the attention and all that. I mean, I'm sure it was, you know, a lot of his hard work paying off, but in his own way, he was very excited about it. But I'm sure it made him uncomfortable just with the kind of personality he is and the kind of kid he is. But he has definitely earned all this attention. So we were definitely happy for him, and he handled it as good as he could.
What do you think won out for Nebraska?
You know, I would just say that he got up there, and, you know, obviously when you go up to Nebraska, that place is pretty special. You know, you got the history, you got championships, you got Coach Frost coming back, so there's a lot of excitement around the program and obviously that fan base. But in the end, I think it was a place he saw that he could fit. And I think that's the most important thing for Will, is that it's not going to be about uniforms and facilities and all that, but just about where he can fit and felt like he could be a part of something special.
Barrett Rood, Ryan Held were pretty instrumental in the recruiting process with Will. With those two, how do you think he connected with them? And I know I'm asking you to speak for Will, and I appreciate you doing this, but how do you think they hit it off? I mean, when it came down to evaluating?
You know, probably they were just real with Will. They didn't try to blow a bunch of smoke because, like I said, Will's a quiet kid, so they probably had to do quite a bit of talking, and Will just kind of gave a couple, you know, one-word answers and things like that. But he's very smart. So if you were going to try to come in and blow a bunch of smoke, that wasn't going to work with Will. So I'm guessing they were just as real as they could, told him the opportunities he could have. And, you know, he just, you know, found something that he could reach onto. And, you know, the family atmosphere is something that we preach at Butler. It's something that makes Butler special. And he probably felt that same thing with the Nebraska coaches.
Kyle Woodall, a couple more minutes with us. Hale Varsity Radio, linebacker coach at Butler and strength and conditioning coach at Butler. We're talking about Will Honus, linebacker, as he's part of Nebraska's 2018 class. How did Will end up at Butler? And what I mean by end up, Butler's a big-time program. It's a major landing spot for a lot of kids post high school that don't go to 4 year, but they get the jump to major 4 year opportunities. So Butler's a big time place to get to. How did you guys end up getting Will to Butler, and what's his backstory from high school?
Well, he's a Wichita kid. He went to Bishop Carroll High School, which is a power here in Kansas. He had he's getting some D1 interest and getting some things, and had an ACL injury his senior year. So that kind of put an end to anything D1. Both his older brothers actually played here at Butler, and both had good success here, both great guys. So we kind of had the end there. We were able to recruit him. Obviously, he knew about us being a Wichita kid, as we're right by Wichita. And, you know, he wanted that D1 dream. He felt he still could be good enough, and he came to Butler. And, as they say, I guess the rest is history. But, obviously, he had that D1 stuff out of high school, and we were just that bridge he needed after the ACL to get there.
Coach, when you look at Will's skill set and apply it to the Big Ten, is he a perfect match for just how physical the Big Ten is?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have, he is a Big Ten linebacker. You know, you look at all the history of the Big Ten linebackers and all the big names and things like that. He is that personality. He is that hard-nosed kid. And you can just put on his film to know how physical he is. So he will fit that mold absolutely perfect.
I want to go through a couple of three traits here with what the inside linebacker needs to do in coverage against the run and rushing the quarterback. Tell me what's special about Will with those three instances.
Well, all three of them he excels at. He is so instinctual in everything. He reads the offense and what's going on so fast. He's so quick and explosive. Defending the run, he knows where the ball is going before I think sometimes the offense does. He's just so smart and instinctual. He plays downhill, physical. Coverage-wise, I mean, he's fast, he's quick, he's athletic. He'll get in the coverage. He's got great hands. He's just a total package. You know, I just can't say enough good things about him. And I know I'm his coach, and you probably think maybe I was just saying this, but I think you guys will get to see exactly what I'm talking about really soon. But he is just everything as a coach. I think if you had a roundtable discussion with just a bunch of coaches and you could say, hey, these are the traits we want, Will's going to check almost every box.
Kyle Woodall with us, Hale Varsity Radio, linebacker coach and strength and conditioning coach at Butler. Will Honus, part of the Nebraska class. Coach, what's the outlook here for Butler with spring ball and winter conditioning and your role as strength and conditioning coach as well as the linebacker coach? What's next for you guys and your program down there?
Well, hopefully reloading with a bunch of Will Honuses, but obviously those are tough to find. Obviously, we feel like we got a pretty good group to come up. And, it's just at junior college, you just reload. That's the next step. You just keep going. Guys got to step up. You got to find some guys to fit in and just keep it rolling. So the next group's up, and now we just try to keep the tradition rolling.
Coach, great to speak with you. Thanks for giving us a few minutes on Hale Varsity.
No problem. Thank you.
Coach Kyle Woodall has done a great job at Butler as a linebacker coach. Some of his kids have gone on to big-time spots, and also he's a strength and conditioning guy. So good for him giving us some insight on Will Honus. Just a real big-time get for Nebraska. We'll spend some time here in a little bit on Justin McGriff, who didn't just blurt out crime dog the last 24 hours with McGriff. It'll be a very Mike Leach Christmas shortly. The Pirate gives the lowdown on Santa Claus when we come back with Hale Varsity presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hale Varsity Radio.
25 minutes away, Ralph Brown will talk recruiting class and Scott Frost, Husker Hall of Famer and 10-year NFL vet, a little bit after 5. Friday forecast with Klausburn. coming up, and a word from Mike Leach on Santa Claus shortly. A word from jewelry and savings with your friend Rick at Sauter Heyman. 0% interest financing through 2020. And their extensive collection of earth-mined and pure-grown diamonds. I've told you a lot about them. Go see how beautiful they are for yourself. And 1 carat diamonds available for just $99 down, $99 a month. 12th and O downtown, Lincoln, South Point, Pavilion, Lincoln, or out west in Grand Island, where you can find Sauter Heyman this holiday season. We had a chance to get caught up with the Pirate. And this is one of my favorite Christmas stories from Coach Leach on fake or real trees and the truth about Santa. Now, I got to ask you, with the holiday season, are you a fake tree or real tree guy?
Well, prefer real trees. Like most people have copped out and do fake trees. Yeah, it's been straight fake trees for the last couple of years. I like real trees better.
And did you eventually break the news to the young ones about Santa, or did you let them learn on your own, on their own?
My oldest daughter, it was a bit of a jolt. The Santa thing, and then after that, if I remember correctly, we had my oldest daughter convinced, and you know, wanted her to have that experience, believe in Santa, which I was mixed on that because I'm still a little pissed on the deception that took place with me and Santa and my parents years ago, you know, And my oldest daughter, if I recall correctly, she was into Santa and was inclined to believe in Santa. And my wife was more into pushing that than I was. And I imagine she's still mad, too, because she's got a temper. And so she didn't like the fact that she'd been led down a dark path in the Santa thing. And then my next daughter, it's almost like she knew from the beginning that there wasn't Santa Claus. And it was sort of like... she says, well, of course it's not real. Everybody knows that. You know, she is one of those that saw through it right from the beginning. And then from there on, the other kids, it was just, I guess, osmosis from the older kids that, no, there wasn't Santa. So they had a lot better time of it than I did.
Well, tell me about your experience. What happened?
Well, I'm going along. And see, back then, Santa was more heavily reinforced, I think, than it is now. And back then, you know, Santa this, Santa that. And I've been picking away at the Santa story for years because I was always, you know, skeptical. And I mean skeptical to the point where, you know, as it got towards Christmas and Mom was kind of suspiciously ducking in and ducking out, well, I would go on search parties and search the house surreptitiously and find the presents and things stashed away. And I mean, even to the point, and this is not the type of child someone wants, but nevertheless, you know, I'd have it worked out what I wanted, and I'd even do stuff like when she was going to be gone for a while, and I was a master of it. I would unwrap the presents, you know, get a paring knife and just slip the tape, you know, where it was wrapped, and slip the box out. Check it out, you know, play with it for half an hour, put it back in, tape it back up, and look surprised at Christmas. Well, then it got to be where, well, we got all these presents. Because, see, I knew that, all right, I'd seen some of these presents. But there was always something, you know, because she'd wrap it and they'd end up under the tree. But there would always be something on Christmas Day that wasn't part of the wrapped ones I discovered. And basically, they were generally somebody, like whether it was a younger brother or sister getting a tricycle or something, somebody was getting something big enough that it wasn't practical to wrap.
Ah.
Or something misshapen, so it wasn't practical to wrap. And so then what they would do is they'd, of course, set that under the tree. And so others aren't left out with unwrapped things under the tree in the morning. You know, so you'd wake up in the morning and boom, there's some extra stuff. And that would include like if a tricycle or something big. And so that, well, so nobody's left out. They would ensure that somebody, that everybody got something under the tree the morning of. And so Well, so then it's like, you know, I start out with a line of questioning. Of course, and this went on for years. I start out with a line of questioning. Does Santa get us all of the presents? You know, no, Grandma and Grandpa get us some presents, you know. How about other things like this or like that? And then I'd say, well, how about the Daniel Boone gun that I got last year? Did Santa get me that, or did you get me that?
And, how do you communicate between the two?
Occasionally she'd get stuck, and she'd say, well, I don't remember, you know, sometimes, you know, but, you know, there's, and then it eventually worked its way towards, well, the stuff on Christmas, you know, that you, that's out there, you know, on Christmas morning, that's definitely Santa, you know. And so I was starting to close in, but, you know, the thing is, I was still a believer. And I was still a believer. And somewhere along the line, and there wasn't as, you know, then it was the type of thing on TV, you had three channels, which amazingly, several of the shows that I would watch are still on, Charlie Brown Christmas. The Rudolph, the red-nosed reindeer with that's like made out of puppets or whatever, and Burl Ives is a snowman in the thing. I mean, so remarkably, some of them still on. But anyway, as I start closing in, eventually, you could tell because the parents had that expression on their face. We need to have a talk about something, and so, and this is as my. And keep in mind, the intense questioning had gone on for like 3 years.
They're tired and of it, huh?
And so then eventually it's like they got a goofy expression on their face, and it's leading into Christmas, as I recall correctly. It's like probably this time, you know, this time of year in relation to Christmas. We have to have a talk. Okay, now this stuff about Santa Claus. Well, it's like my parents had never lied to me. I mean, it was a loss of innocence. You know, you can't go home anymore, and it's not the same. I mean, it's all those things. And then I even started rattling through. Well, I asked about this, and I asked about this, and I asked about this. Bam, wham, right in the face, you know. I mean, there isn't a nice man up north with a bunch of friendly elves pulls all this stuff off. And I would have to say our family, my sister was like, oh, well, whatever. And then my brother was, well, he was younger, and he was just trying to stay out of harm's way from me and my sister. So, because she was, you know, she was a fairly, my sister was and still is a person that'll put her hands on you. And but anyway, so you're really opening up the holidays on a positive note with your listeners. So Merry Christmas to everybody.
Ah, yes, the pirate story. Old Saint Nick. Good stuff from Coach Leach. Ralph Brown coming up. We'll wind down hour one with Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
10 minutes away from Ralph Brown on Hail Varsity Radio. Friday forecast, and we'll spend some time about the passing of Dick Emberg in hour two. 466-377-6800. 825-5865 can tap the line. Chillingbridge Court can tap house. Let's talk about Justin McGriff and the wideout, the latest to sign for Nebraska, did so today. And McGriff, 6'6", 220 out of Tampa. Ralph will we'll get caught up with Ralph and kind of get his take. And he's done a great job from a scouting and a breakdown standpoint, Ralph has, on social media. But his thoughts on McGriff, a three-star guy, and Ralph kind of touches on it. Ralph, the old wily defensive back he is, notices things when you're trying to defend a guy. And the catch radius for McGriff is something that impresses Ralph. He's a guy that goes and gets the football. And you got a guy that's 6'6", right? How many fade routes are dancing in your head here? A lot. 6'6 guy. big target, wants to get in the end zone. And you look at it where he's out of, Tampa, Florida, Jefferson High School, and the size, the speed, and a nice get for Coach Frost, for Coach Walters. And Walters was with the network last night talking quite a bit about what their goal is on offense, and the goal is defensively, and that's to stress the heck out of opposing offenses and defenses. And when you get in the red zone and you have a guy that's 6'6 in McGriff, it is not only a chance to pop a big play, average 19 yards a catch, but you can, good luck trying to D him up. Do you have a 6'3", 6'4 corner? Do you have a Richard Sherman on your team to try and defend this guy in the end zone? Most teams don't. So for Nebraska to get a weapon like this, you know, one of the areas of depth concern and question is wide receiver and defensive back. Nebraska's got work to do defensive back-wise, and they'll go to work on it between now and February. But you get a wideout that's three-star guy for Rivals and a top 150 in Florida by 24/7. So it's good for Nebraska to get a position of need at wide receiver, get a guy that has some speed, but get a guy that can really be a difference maker in the red zone. How many times did Nebraska struggle in the red zone this last season? Who are your options in the red zone? Well, it's turning out to be Stoll, it looked like, the tight end. But if Nebraska didn't hit a big play, you didn't feel like they were going to get seven. They settled for a lot of threes. Different offense, I understand, coming in. You don't know who's quarterbacking, but you do have a guy that's 6'6 out of Tampa. So good stuff from Frost and Company. 12 signees, 19 the number to get. And we'll see where Nebraska goes. Ralph Brown's coming up shortly. A reminder, if you go out tonight, please do not drink and drive. You have some holiday cheer. Good for you. Enjoy friends and family. But if you get caught drinking and driving, you'll face a DWI that could cost you up to $12,000 in fines and fees and jail time. And you'll be required to install that interlock device on your vehicle. So if you're heading out tonight, tomorrow, this weekend, get that sober ride home. Remember, you drink, you drive, you lose. A message from the Nebraska Department of Transportation and Highway Safety Office. Colton Stone, Chris Schmidt, and great to be with you on a Friday here on Hail Varsity Radio. Ralph Brown, Husker standout, All-American, All-Century, 10-year NFL vet, next on this recruiting class with Hail Varsity.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back with you, Hour 2, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. And it's always great to get caught up with Husker Hall of Famer, 10-year NFL vet, and we love seeing him on Twitter and catching up with him on Hail Varsity, Ralph Brown. Ralph, you're wearing a Santa hat right now.
Yeah, actually, figuratively I am, because I'm still doing a little bit of shopping, trying to finish up today, so you could say I still am, yeah.
All right, so it's Santa Ralph. Well, good. Well, we'll need that selfie, the selfie of Ralph in that Santa hat. But Coach Frost and company doing some work, right? When it comes to the early signing period, and I've enjoyed your social media rundown on Nebraska's class so far, and they got Justin McGriff today, the three-star wideout. And Ralph, when you look at this class and when you look at the 12 early signees, what's your immediate impression of the kids Scott brought in?
I think he filled some important needs on the offense and defensive side of the ball. They got some good gets, and let me start with Adrian Martinez. That was a huge get. He's a four-star high school quarterback. He didn't play his senior year because of a torn labrum in his throwing arm, but he has all the skill set and intangibles to basically be a part of Scott's system. You heard what Scott said. He was the perfect fit for their offense, and what he brings to the table is just awesome. You get speed at the outside with Jerron Woodyard. That speedster, great, you know, after the catch, great off press. Then you have defense, and they hit a home run with Will Holness, the linebacker, sideline to sideline, devastating player, and they just keep, you know, doing a great job with this whole 12 guys that they signed with Greg Bell, the running back. I mean, he's great in the hole, great vision, has that great breakaway speed also. And I think with Scott Frost and what they're doing, they know exactly the type of player that they want. They like speed, they like length, they like disruptive guys on the defensive side of the ball. And if you look at these 12 guys just in this early signing period, they've hit all those.
Ralph Brown's with us, Hale Varsity Radio, at Ralph D. Brown on Twitter. Follow him if you don't already. Good recap on some of the early signees. And Ralph, we covered a lot of players right there. I'm going to narrow down on a few and follow up. Let's talk about Adrian Martinez. We had Adrian on Wednesday, and I know you've had a chance to see him doing the work you do with Fox Sports out in L.A. For high school ball. And it's too bad that he missed his senior season, but the kid was a coach on the field. He found other ways to motivate and help his team. When you look at his film and you see his skill set with what Scott has done with previous quarterbacks, we know it's a perfect match. Your thoughts on Martinez maybe coming in and winning the job?
You know what? I really think he can come in and win the job. And the great thing about Scott Frost's offense is it's a system offense. So it'll protect efficiencies in your game so you can help him grow into the system and be a better and more productive quarterback. But Adrian Martinez, he reminds me of a more polished Geno Smith when you saw him in college. He's a great pocket passer, very composed in the pocket, has great touch on the ball, and you'll see him hit every quadrant of the football field with his arm, and he can run as well. And that's the type of quarterback that Scott Frost likes in his offense. And for me, he was a 4-star last year, and I truly believe that Scott Frost and this offense and the Huskers are getting a 5-star player if he finishes out his senior season.
What do you think is so unique about Scott when it comes to working with quarterbacks? I know his history is there, but that seems to be a big-time connection when you look at Milton, when you look at Mariota. The proof is there, but how do you think Scott connects with his guys behind center?
Well, he just understands there's an internal clock you have to have, and if you buy into their systems and their system and you follow these 3 to 5 steps or whatever his steps are in his system, you will be successful. And you look at these guys in the system with Mariota, what they've done, I think Adrian Martinez can come and do the same if they listen to Troy Walters, they listen to Scott Frost in terms of their system, where they're attacking, what throws they should make, and have that internal clock. When that play breaks down, extend the play and use your legs. They know exactly what they're doing, and that's why you don't have to be a 5-star quarterback to be successful in their system. But when you do have a quarterback with the intangibles and skill sets of Adrian Martinez, you're going to see an awesome and miraculous offense march up and down the football field.
Ralph, you're around high school kids and you see high school ball games. How many offenses do you see that try and mimic, replicate, and mirror what Oregon, what Frost, what UCF have done?
I would say about 90% of the high school football games I call, basically both teams are mirroring each other when it comes to the spread, shotgun, read option, you know, attacking with speed and just throwing the ball outside on the perimeter with these screen plays and jail break screens and then trying to hit you down the football field with these seam routes and deep overs. So what Chip Kelly has revolutionized, Scott Frost learned from it, added some tidbits of Coach Osborne to his offense. And I like the combination of when you're watching UCS offense and what you're going to see in Nebraska, that combination of what Osborne taught him, what Helfrich had taught him, and what Chip Kelly has taught him. It's awesome to see, and I'm excited to watch the Huskers and watch UCF in this bowl game as well.
No, that'll be outstanding, and I think there's going to be a lot of red down in Atlanta for Auburn.
Yeah, of course.
Nebraska fans going to be checking that out. Let's talk Will Honus. Earlier today, we had a chance to get caught up with Will's position coach at Butler, and Will's kind of a man of few words, but he is all about action on the field. What wowed you about Honus at linebacker?
He's an attacking style linebacker, very disruptive. I like how he dominates the game. You can tell he's well read and well studied when it comes to the plays that are coming about. He's very disruptive. You know, he disengages very well. He's an A-plus blitzer, and he's one of those guys that's just a leader. He's a man's man on defense. And he's a guy that, to me, honestly, can take over a ball game just by himself.
Does he remind you of anybody you've played with? And again, to couch that question, not trying to overhype, but there are similarities you see in guys' games. Is there a linebacker that he reminds you of?
Well, that's a good one. You know, honestly, I mean, he reminds me a little of a cross between like a Terrell Farley and a Jamel Williams, like those guys that
really
at the college level. Yeah, that he just takes over games. When you watch his film, he's in on almost every tackle. He gets everybody lined up. He's basically calling out some of these plays. He's great in pass protection. He has soft hands, and he has the speed. After he makes the catch, he turns into a running back or a wide receiver, and he can get into the end zone. So he has that speed. He's very disruptive, and he's going to be fun to watch. He's one of those guys that can take over a ball game just by himself with his IQ and the way he plays the game.
Well, and I think one of his three picks was a pick six, and he's tough enough to survive in the Big Ten at linebacker, but he's fast enough. And those are two names Nebraska fans hold in pretty high reverence, and you played with Farley and Jamel, and those guys were basically safeties that were kind of moved up to play the outside backer spot, and They were demons off the edge, getting after the quarterback. That's what I'm excited about with Hodes. He's a guy, Ralph, that can stop the run, can be decent to good in coverage, right? But you're going to use him as a pass rusher, correct?
Yeah, you're exactly right. He's basically a Swiss Army knife. He can do it all, and he can blitz. He can cover out in space. He's great in zone coverage. He has great field awareness, and that's what you want if you're a defensive coordinator. Guys like this, he's a selfless type of player. He's going to give his all on every play.
A few more minutes here. Ralph Brown with us, Hail Varsity Radio. We're interrupting Ralph's Christmas shopping to talk some Nebraska recruiting at Ralph D. Brown on Twitter. Ralph, let's spend a minute here on two of the edge guys. David Alston out of Minnesota. You played for the Vikings. You know that area well. Tate Wildermans out of Colorado. Tate told us he's going to try and come in around 265 or so and then beef up to 293 bills so he can take and destroy some double teams. But when you look at both of these guys, Alston, he is 6'3 and a freak off the edge, kind of that hybrid. Wilderman looks to be a guy that's going to try and set the edge on the line. What are your thoughts on both of these guys when it comes to run stopping and getting after the quarterback?
Well, if we talk about David Alston, you know, the first thing that pops out to me was his athletic ability. He has tremendous hands. I forget how many interceptions he had, but he had a ton, more than a handful, I think, or somewhere in that nature. But he's great with hand-eye coordination. Great getting after the quarterback. He has a litany of moves, and he's tall. He's always aware. If he can't get to the quarterback, the bat balls down as well. And he's just very disruptive. He has a high motor, too. And then when you go to Tate Wildermans, this guy, he's just a more physical player than David Alston is. He has a great get off at the snap of the ball, and he has a motor as well. He tracked down a lot of plays from the backside, and that kind of reminds me of what Grant Wistrom used to do, hunting those plays down from the backside. Jared Thomas, you know, Mike Rucker, all those guys used to track plays down from the backside. That's what we need at Nebraska. And Tate Wildermans, he puts on that weight. You're going to see a guy who's hungry. He has a high motor and very disruptive. You start putting these guys, this program, the weight lifting program in place with this defense, it's going to be fun to watch.
You know, a guy that is here is Dante Williams. He's got 3 years. He's a JUCO. And you know how thin Nebraska is at corner. I mean, I don't need to tell you that. And he's a guy that can play nickel, can play safety, can play corner. We'll see where Nebraska wants to put him. But what impressed you about Dante Williams?
Just his speed and his confidence is so high when he plays the game. And the one thing I put on my tweet was he has to be careful with the way he hits at the D1 level, because this guy is a missile. I mean, he's a great tackler. He's very explosive. His closing speed is amazing. And he has great just field awareness in terms of getting the football, tracking it in the air, and coming down with it. The one thing I like and I try to pay attention is confidence. How confident are these guys on the football field? How are they acting after the snap? I mean, after they make a play? And this guy is just energy, and guys will feed off of him. He's one of those guys that I would love to play with if you're on the defense, because he's going to make plays. He's consistent with his tackling. He's a great cover guy as well.
Yeah, Deontre Williams is a good get for Nebraska. Where do you think he maybe fits initially? Do they put him at corner? Do they look at him at safety? Do they do nickel? Where do you think he gets that first look?
I think he's such an explosive hitter. I mean, I think you try him at nickel and corner just because the cornerback spot wasn't solid last year with what we've had. Mm-hmm. You try him out there and you see what happens. And if not, you kind of move him into the nickel spot. But he's a guy that's just aware of the game. He knows how to slip blocks, make tackles, and he's a smart player. You can tell by watching film. You know, but if I'm, you know, the defensive coordinator, was it Shenander? Is that how you say
Shenander.
His name? Yeah, if I'm Shenander, you know, I start him at corner and nickel and see how he plays from there just to get him on the field because they don't have sound corners for next season. That position is up in the air.
Ralph, thought on Bell. I know you touched on him earlier, but what do you think he does in that running back room here for spring ball? I mean, where do you think he fits in comparison to what's already on campus? Is this something he can come in and win and be the primary ball carrier for Nebraska in the offense moving forward?
Yeah, just by watching him on tape, he's the guy, and I don't see why he won't be the starter coming next season with just the way his physicality, the way he attacks the line of scrimmage, and he has tremendous vision in the hole. When he gets the ball, if the hole's not there, he finds the right place to go to every time. He'll go lateral and get north-south very quickly, and once he gets in the open space, he has that breakaway speed, and that's the one thing that I was excited about watching him. He has soft hands out of the backfield, so if you get the right quarterback combo combination in Scott Frost's system, if it's Adrian Martinez, you put Greg Bell to the right and left of him, and you put some of these receivers with speed, JT Spillman, Jerron Woodward, you put this length at the tight end position, this offense is going to be hard to stop, and defenses are going to be at odds and being a bind on how to stop this offense moving up and down the field.
Ralph, you're fired up, man. I mean, you love Nebraska football, and you support the program, and you've supported previous coaches. That said, man, there's an energy in your voice about what's here now.
Yeah, of course, and I'm just hyped because I know what Scott Frost brings to the table. I know the history he's had winning at Nebraska. I know the tutelage he's been under for all those years, and I know what he brings to the table. He's a blueprint guy. He knows what he's doing, and when you see a guy who knows what he's doing, knows how to build things, you see improvements right away, and we're seeing that right now at Nebraska with the recruiting, with the energy, with the Nebraska fan base, and we hadn't seen that with the previous coaches in Callahan, Pelini, you know, and sadly Riley as well, but Scott Frost knows exactly what he's doing. He knows how to get from A to B, and you're seeing it right before your eyes.
One question here about the Nebraska job. You just listed the previous coaches, and it was a good story today in the World Herald by Dirk Chatlin on that Nebraska job, on the fishbowl, on the expectations. And Scott knows it. He's lived it as a player, and he's got Coach Osborne to lean on as a mentor from a coach and from a guy who knows the expectations. All that being said, it's still that the Nebraska gig's kind of it can be a monster. It can grind people down. It can grind coaches down. Do you think he'll be different than his predecessors when it comes to being able to handle it and not let the job and the expectations wear on him?
I believe so. And you got to think, what we haven't had a coach at Nebraska who's from Nebraska, understands the tempo, knows how to move the needle, and just understands the fan base and what the state actually truly needs. Pelini didn't, Riley didn't, sadly, and Callahan didn't as well. So when you get to Scott Frost and what he's doing, he understands what the Nebraska fan base needs, what the state of Nebraska wants to hear, and that's why as soon as he got here, he started talking about the walk-on program. None of our previous coaches were high on that. I loved it because those are the guys that I hung out with a lot with when I played on the team. And that's the foundation. You can't lose the guys from your state. And Scott knows exactly what he's talking about. He understands the big picture, and he will cover and touch on all the details building this program. I think he's the perfect guy, and I think he'll be with Nebraska for a long time.
A Merry Christmas to you, Ralph Brown, Hall of Famer and 10-year NFL vet at Ralph D. Brown. Ralph, we'll get caught up after the new year, bud. Thanks for a few.
Yeah, same to you. Merry Christmas, brother.
We're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Back with Yale Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. It is that time, the final Friday forecast of 2017, presented to you by your friends at the Gamblers Assistance Program, the Nebraska Council on Compulsive Gambling and Choices Treatment Center. If you or someone you love has a gambling problem, call the statewide helpline at 1-800-522-4700. We bring in Brandon Vogel of HaleVarsity.com and Magazine. Vogues, Merry Christmas, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. Merry Christmas to you as well.
All right. And without further ado, it is the one, the only. He's red and he's imaginary wearing red. Clausburn is with us. Claus, Merry Christmas.
Well, Merry Christmas to you, Christopher. I'm just finishing up my holiday gifts here for all of our new signees. I'm sending them that clip from Star Wars where Han Solo says, "That's great, kid. Don't get cocky," to remind them the work is just starting now. So I think it'll go over well.
Well thought, Clausburn. Well done. The Bowl Bonanza is already underway, but let's start with some of the New Year's Six ball games. And Ohio State and USC to kickstart us. Ohio State is favored by 7.5. Folks, you start us off here. Do you like SC or do you like Urban and Company?
Well, I like the fact that for all those years we were prevented from having an actual national championship game because the Rose Bowl was afraid of a game like this that is now happening at the Cotton Bowl. So we can start with that. I think Ohio State's going to win. USC, a lot like last year, I think is playing their best football towards the end of the year. So I'll take the Trojans to cover. Buckeyes get the win. Ohio State 37-31.
Okay. You know what? I think it's going to be an entertaining ball game. I think it's going to be a lot of points. I'm agreeing with you there. I look at this thing, and it kind of comes down to quarterbacks. It always does. You have Darnold, you have Barrett, and JT has been good a lot this year, but he's been bad a couple of times. Darnold really was pressing early and kind of came on strong late. I'm going to go with USC. I think the Trojans' defense will cause enough problems to make JT a little less effective. And I like Darnold, if he gets time, and that's the question, too, to win this for USC. Kind of similar to the Penn State SC Rose Bowl a year ago. Give me the Trojans 45 and Ohio State 41. A classic, a thriller, and a USC victory. Clausburn, what do you see?
Well, I've been calling this one the "we're both here because ESPN doesn't own our conference network" bowl, but look, I'm sorry. I shouldn't complain about the Trojans' coverage. That's usually reserved for college freshmen with late girlfriends. So I'm going to agree with you, Christopher. I think quarterback makes a difference. I think Darnold's a better quarterback, so I'll take the Trojans to stand tall, 31-21.
10-point win for SC. Let's talk Penn State and Washington. Penn State, man, they have been right there. What is it, combined 7 points, 11 points, something like that. Not even. It might be less than that. But the back-to-back losses, nail-biter, the overtime against Sparty, and then blowing a 2-touchdown lead against Ohio State on the road. Washington is good. And you have Peterson that's just a tremendous coach. I like Penn State in this, though. I just think Barkley is going to be big time. And McSorley, I just love his ability to extend plays. And he's been in big games. He's won a lot of big games. Washington's good. They're no stranger to primetime either. But give me Penn State here, 35-31, the win, the cover for the Nittany Lions, and a little bit of hope and help here for the Big Ten this bowl season. Vogues, what do you see here with Penn State and Washington?
Yeah, it's hard for me to find much fault with anything Penn State did this year. You mentioned, you know, both their losses were kind of explainable and good losses, if such a thing exists. I think I'm a little surprised the line is this tight. I don't think Penn State's going to blow them out or anything, especially, with the offensive transition they're about to embark on. But I do think they get the win and cover here. I'll take the Nittany Lions 28-20.
28-20, a little bit lower scoring. Claus, what happens here, the Huskies or the Nittany Lions?
Well, first of all, you mentioned Chris Peterson, and I call him the prom queen because he's what a lot of men in Nebraska want, but they were never going to get. These guys don't realize sometimes the pretty ones don't care how nice you are or how many episodes of Star Trek you've seen. But anyway, I disagree with both of you. I think Penn State lacks the killer instinct, as evidenced in the Nebraska game when they let come almost all the way back. So I'm going to take Washington in this one. 35-27.
Okay, Klausburn says the Huskies. Let's talk Orange Bowl. And the U is back, or at least as close to being back as they've been in a long time. That's a home game for the U, but I just like Wisconsin's toughness. I like their linebacking core. I like their run game. And give me Wisconsin to thump the U 24-17. Kind of a lower scoring ball game, a lot of defense, a lot of athletes. And Wisconsin makes fewer mistakes in the run game. The defense, it travels well down to South Beach. Give me Wisconsin. Vogues?
Yeah, back when Miami was undefeated and we were still trying to decide just how good they were, you know, this is kind of the interesting theoretical matchup. Could they beat Wisconsin, who also was undefeated and maybe hadn't proven quite as much? I didn't think so then. I don't think so now. I think the Hurricanes will keep it close enough to get a cover here, but as you mentioned, Wisconsin is just a little bit too solid. So I'll take the Badgers 27-24.
Klaus, you like the U, or do you want Wisconsin?
Well, it's really the my nightmare of the 80s versus my nightmare of whatever the heck you call this decade. For those of you who've seen Big Ten Elite on the BTN there, you know I'm pretty good at predicting what Miami's going to do in bowl games. So this is one you take to the bank. The only thing Miami is better at than Wisconsin is bikini competitions. Take the Badgers in this one, 31-24.
31-24, a win and a cover for Wisconsin. Friday forecast here on Hail Varsity Radio. Brandon Vogel and Klausburn. Chris Schmidt, great to have you in. Let's talk college football playoff. We'll go to Bama and Clemson. Bama's favored here by 3. This is the trifecta here as you get round 3 of Clemson v. Bama. And the rubber match here is at 1-1. Clemson and Boyd have been incredible. They've reloaded the quarterback. They're talented on defense. Bama, I thought they'd beat Auburn. Obviously, they did not. The Bama offensive line's been good. The run game's been solid. Bama's just got a ton of injuries. I like Clemson. I like the quarterback play. I think Hurts is really good for Bama, but he's just been off, specifically when you look back to how ineffective he was against Auburn. You'll see a similar to better defense in Clemson. And give me the Tigers by a touchdown, 28-21, a little bit lower scoring. But I like Clemson to move on to the championship game. Vogues?
Yeah, I think this is a tough spot for the Tigers. You add in the revenge factor from last year and the fact that Alabama, you know, depending on who you talk to, somewhat controversially got in. You don't need to give Nick Saban extra motivational angles. The Tide have those in this game. I'm going to take them to win outright and cover barely, 24-20.
Okay, so you think the revenge is, I mean, it's real. Will it be applied? And Vogues says yes. Klaus, what do you like here, Clemson or Bama?
Well, Brandon, it's funny you say it that way. I'm one of the people you talk to, and I would say that Bama would not deserve to be in there. Bama, to me, is kind of the Bitcoin of college football. You can't rationally explain to me why they are so deserving of all the praise they get, why they're so valuable. They just kind of are. But like Bitcoin, they're going to lose big this holiday season. I'm taking Clemson in this one by a score of 35-21.
All right. So Clemson big, says Klausburn. Oklahoma and Georgia. Georgia's very one-dimensional, but it's worked. Great defense. Baker Mayfield, man, is special. Great player. Needs to work on that 40 time in cowboy boots. Other than that, though, nothing to complain about. I like Oklahoma because of their offense, and I think their defense, while it's gotten beaten up at times, I think they can settle down and stop the Georgia run game enough to make this thing a winner for Boomer Sooner. Give me OU 42-31. I just think Georgia will get some points here, but that OU defense buckles up when they need to. Give me the Sooners and give me the win. Georgia's favorite in this, though, by a point and a half. Bogues, how do you see things?
Yeah, I'm a little bit surprised by that line, too. You always get a ton of credit for playing great defense, which Georgia does. You get a little bit less credit for playing great offense, which Oklahoma does. And when you put a great quarterback on top of it, it's just I think Georgia eventually is going to run out of answers here. I like the Sooners to win outright as well, 35-24.
Okay, 35-24, says Vogues. Klausburn, Boomer Sooner or them Dogs?
Well, you know, it's kind of strange to me that these two schools have never played. I mean, competed in mullet growing and conversion fan painting for decades, but they've never been on the football field. And quite frankly, I don't think Georgia has ever seen an offense like this. I mean, unless they find out that a lot of members of the Norman Police Department still have college eligibility, they're not going to be able to stop Baker Mayfield. So I'm going to take Oklahoma in this one, though it pains me to say it. Score 41-28.
All right, OU moving on to play Clemson. Let's talk Central Florida and Auburn. War Eagle by 9.5. Auburn's got better talent, better players. They just do. Central Florida has a coach they love and they're cheering for and they want to send out unbeaten. I don't think it's enough. I think Auburn finds a way to end the unbeaten reign of Central Florida. Give me Auburn 35-28, the win for Auburn, the cover for Central Florida. Vogues?
Yeah, I'm in much the same spot. I'm actually, quote-unquote, working this game, so I should probably do the honorable thing like Herb Street does each Saturday and accuse myself from making a pick. But
okay,
I won't do that. The talent deficit, as you mentioned, all in Auburn's favor, but I think the motivation angle, which tends to weigh pretty heavy during bowl season, is with UCF. It won't be quite enough, but should be a fun game nonetheless. I'll take Tigers 31-27.
Claus, what happens here, Central Florida or Auburn?
I'm still in shock that Brandon is allowing himself to be viewed as less honorable than Kirk Herbstreit. I'm going to need a second here, guys. No, I'm kidding. Well, obviously, we're all rooting for Central Florida. We're rooting for Scott. We're rooting for all those guys. And I really hope that Central Florida fans enjoy this. I know there's been some tension and they're a little upset with Scott and the rest of the guys, but after this game, you don't know what's going to happen. You're losing Scott Frost and his strength man, Zach Duvall, and replacing him with Josh Heupel and his nutritionist, Little Debbie. So enjoy this game while you can. I think it'll be close. I'm going to pull Central Florida to win this one by a score of 31-28.
Klausburn says Central Florida with the win. Vogues, we'll catch up soon, and thanks for the time.
Thank you.
Klaus, you be good.
Okay.
By now, you've probably heard that the U.S. has an immigration lottery. Yes, that's right, a ridiculous immigration lottery.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time on Friday, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Colton Stone. Colton, you've been busy, man. You had the women's game earlier. How was that?
It was good. It was a difficult first quarter for them, but they kind of evened it out and figured it out along the way. Big game by Emily Wood, hitting 5 of 7 three-pointers, 19 points. But it ends their streak, and they'll enter conference play on Tuesday at 9-4.
All right. Husker men are in action tonight, and it'll be interesting to see what, if anything, happens at center. Jordy, again, didn't have a great night. Mm-hmm. How long do you keep riding that? Because you're at a tipping point right now with having to be patient and stick with the guy and also figure out what's best for your team. And you need some interior point production from your team. So that's just dicey for Tim Miles. And he, listen, I mean, Jordy's going to have to go to work, get better.
And I don't know if Roby's your answer for center, but you got to think at some point you maybe start him just to kind of see what that lineup looks like.
Well, can you get away going ultra small or more athlete versus size?
Right. Go guard heavy almost.
Go guard or go hybrid. You know what I mean? Hybrid style of player. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I think Roby can defend the rim, obviously. But he's also, you saw what Kansas did with the lob, and you had a large man that drives a minivan posting up poor Robes down there, and it's Dunk City. I don't know. Nebraska will figure it out. I like Doobie as well, but offensively, there's no threat, really, with him.
That's the side with the center that I think they've been lacking. It's not necessarily the defense. It's or the aggressiveness or anything like that. It's,
now, Doobie's
it's the
defense
side.
Has been great. You need some help on offense. And Jordy showed enough last year to be good offensively. And he's just struggled. And he struggled in some games that he shouldn't struggle in, and he struggled in some games that, okay, that might happen because mm-hmm. Kansas is good and Creighton's Creighton, and we'll see where he goes. But very, very – that's, you know, that's part of the perks, as they say, of coaching, right? Having to make those personnel decisions and sticking with a kid or knowing when to move on for the time being and pray that you can go back to a guy that he stays ready and gets ready. Jack went through it last year. Mm-hmm. And Jack, you know, the highlights of the year, Jack was pretty instrumental a year ago when they started off 3-0. And he stuck with it because he'd been struggling. Right now he's seeing minimal minutes because there's guys that are just way better and not as much of a liability defensively getting the look. So Nebraska gets to hook up tonight with, is it Delaware?
Delaware State.
Yeah.
Yep.
The Devils?
I'm not sure of the nickname. I know they play out of the MEAC, though.
Right. I just think of Delaware and the Blue Hens.
The Blue Hens.
And,
Joe Flacco.
And Flacco.
Yep.
Right?
It's,
yeah. Ah, Delaware. Joe Flacco. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning. Have a great Friday night. Appreciate your time and tuning in. Colton Stone, Chris Schmidt. Talk to you tomorrow, 7 a.m. with Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.